Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from Washington, D.C. It is the afternoon of the 19th of August, and we're here to bring you the updates on the campaign. But before we go anywhere, I first of all want to remind everybody about the other broadcast, which I'm now doing, which is essentially, it will quickly become 5 days a week, I think, shortly after Labor Day. But right now, four programs. It's called The American System. And I believe you can find this at AmericanSystem.tv. AmericanSystem.tv. You can essentially subscribe to this program for a token amount, about the price of a Starbucks. So we hope that people who are interested and have been interested in this program, pardon me, and have valued it, will also then go over and add, certainly keep listening here, because this has its own particular niche, but also then help us out on the American system. Now, given the fact that Chinese influence under the sinister Chinese-British alliance, that Chinese influence is spreading everywhere, and no less a personage than Bannon, Stephen Bannon, the new, what can we call him, the new unsavory CEO of the Trump campaign. That guy is a Brexit freak. He wanted to destroy the European Union. He helped to do it. And that puts him squarely in the service of the Anglo-Chinese bloc, because that's who wanted the Brexit. People like this running around, he's been called a conservative. Well, given all this Chinese influence, I want to expound to you the three knots. It's like the three no's, but in English, the three knots. First of all, we have this guy, Stephen Bannon of Breitbart, right? A scurrilous, vile publication. They claim to represent Western civilization. That's a good one. I know something about Western civilization. And I've respected Western civilization. And I can tell you, Breitbart has nothing to do with Western civilization. It is the negation of Western civilization. It is the return to barbarism. It is the return to savagery. That's what you get on Breitbart. We'll talk more about them. But right now, the thing that is unbelievable is to find that site described as conservative. Conservative? Are you kidding me? That is right-wing radical, neo-fascist, fascist. And I'm sure in their, you know, their moments, they reach the level of Nazism from time to time. And of course, that's also the problem with Trump. Conservative does not mean right-wing radical anxious for, you know, profound change. The whole point of conservatism is you respect precedent, you respect tradition. You have a kind of respect for the status quo if you're a conservative, and that would be that the status quo is not random. It's not simply the result of somebody's caprice, but you have to figure that there are deep forces that shape the reality that you see. And therefore, if you're a conservative, right, and even if you're not in some parts of the world, right? Not here in the U.S. We're for revolutionary change ourselves. We don't call ourselves conservatives. But if you do call yourself a conservative, you've got to be interested, again, in precedent, tradition. If you're an American conservative, you have to be interested in Benjamin Franklin and George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. And you've also got to realize that somebody like Franklin D. Roosevelt and indeed John F. Kennedy, this has now become part of a tradition. So if you're conservative, you're a traditionalist. If you look at Breitbart, you will see that this is the opposite. It is a raving mad dog attack on precedent, tradition, the status quo, existing notions of how things get done. Ultimately, it's a raving attack on the Constitution. And the people they put forward are decadent, maybe degenerate would be better, degenerate products of latent imperialism with their radical subjectivity and their contempt for the masses and their you know, elitism based on nothing, based on stupidity, posturing, pretension, and so forth. And this also goes for Trump. Now, come on, you can't call Trump a conservative. He's not a conservative. He's a radical right winger. His contempt for the Constitution could not be more obvious. He wants a dictatorship. He thinks he's the man on horseback. He thinks he's Julius Caesar. He thinks he's Napoleon. He may think he's Hitler. This is incompatible with American traditionalism. So American traditionalism has a lot to offer, and indeed the reforms that we propose, the Tax Wall Street Party, include primarily things that are road-tested, tried and true, Henry Clay's American system, Franklin D. Roosevelt New Deal, Kennedy, New Frontier, space program, things like this. We are very much in a tradition. In other words, the things that we're trying to implement are, they have, in general, in most cases, have already been tried and have succeeded tremendously before reactionary forces then came in and put them down. So don't call Bannon a conservative. He's not. He's a right-wing reactionary extremist with a very vicious overtone. And that the same thing goes for Trump. Now, we're also told that Bannon is a nationalist. Well, I'm afraid not. That's not nationalism. The most extreme case is that the entire neo-Confederate area of opinion, right? The nostalgics of Robert E. Lee, right? The dolts and cretins who seriously argue in public that slavery had nothing to do with the Confederate States of America, right? When we have the infamous cornerstone speech by Alexander Stevens, the Confederate vice president, where he says the basis of the entire Confederacy is slavery. And he says this is where they got it wrong, right? Thomas Jefferson got it wrong. The Declaration of Independence is wrong. It's wrong, says this character, Alexander Stevens, a little frail guy. You've seen him in the Lincoln movie a couple of years ago. Alexander Stevens says, look, you know, we have a great discovery. We discovered that people are not equal, all not created equal, and that is the principle of the Confederacy. Then you go and also look at the and not only not equal, but that slavery is indispensable, he says, for a healthy society. Then you look at the various conventions, declarations, manifestos put out by these states as they secede. What's in all of them? Slavery, slavery, slavery. So deal with it, Confederates, white supremacists, and other trash. This is what you have embraced. So it's clearly not nationalism. How you can't be a Confederate and an American nationalist at the same time. In other words, you can't say, my wish is to destroy the Union through secessionism and treason and rebellion, and also say, I'm an American nationalist. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. The essence of secessionism is anarchy, treason, and slavery. And that is why states' rights, that is the dirtiest slogan in the history of the United States. It's always been the bad guys. So I've done conservatism, nationalism. Get set. We're going to do What's an Apology? Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. And now you can always, you can tune in and hear yours truly 4 and soon 5 days a week at The American System. That's the American System Network, and we'll be there, so please do look into that. And this is in addition to the current efforts that you hear here just a couple of more words on nationalism, right? Bannon cannot be a nationalist. Trump is not a nationalist. He is anti-American. Anti-American in a formal sense, right? Against the U.S. government, against our institutions, against the Constitution, and all the rest of it. And then when you get down into the values, right, about the importance of immigration, the importance of building a melting pot labor force so you compete with the world, so that you escape the demographic crisis, which has overtaken all of the competition, be it Russia, China, Japan, Europe, all under the gun of a demographic crisis where they don't know where their workforce is going to be. And that was essentially what Merkel said when she attempted this, I think, radical and perhaps too radical solution. She said, otherwise, we're not going to have any people here. Yes, right. So those are good American traditions. Obviously, tolerance, obviously, cooperation, a mistrust of the super rich, right? The populist impulse, because they're part of it, too, right? The Omaha Convention of 1890 is the roots of the progressive era, for whatever that's worth, but mainly for the New Deal, which is worth everything. So you have to describe Bannon and Trump, right, this combination, as racist, to be sure, nativist, and nativist is always the resentment of the people who have been here and somehow gotten somewhere. If they were given a ladder to climb, they are eager to pull that ladder up so nobody else can get on it. That is not the American way. They are defeatists. Defeatists in the sense that Franklin D. Roosevelt in the late winter, early spring of 1942, you can find quotes in FDR's papers where he says, I see the danger of defeatism, because you have the eternal Westbrook Pegler, the eternal Hearst Press, the eternal Chicago Tribune of Colonel McCormick, the eternal Sissy Patterson here of the newspaper she had in Washington, and the Daily Snooze, right, the New York Daily News, of also part of the same family. They were all pushing defeatism, that the enemies are overwhelming, resistance is pointless, give in to Hitler. That's America first. Charles Lindbergh, friend of Goering. That's Trump. When Trump says, make America first, most people don't realize what an awful slogan that is, because that meant, in effect, don't interfere with Hitler. Let him crush the British. Let him crush the Soviets. Let Japan crush China, if necessary, which was going on. We're just going to sit here in Fortress America until Hitler comes for us. And that is the Nazi war plan for World War II. It said, you can't fight everybody at the same time, so do it seriatim, one after the other. That was Hitler's great insight. So Lindbergh proposed playing right into that. So Trump, a nativist, a racist, a defeatist. And he would also be a defeatist in terms of the problems are insoluble. We'll never be able to solve them. In some of these discussions, you'll find a term, divisionism. Divisionism or disunity. That's a very strong feature, right? That you got to have the main fight is inside the country. And then the enemy within, those minorities, those hyphenated Americans, what's with them? They're a threat. Okay? So this is not nationalism. Stop calling Trump a nationalist. He can't be. The entire Confederate bandwagon is in his corner, and he is somebody who wants to essentially play one part of the United States against another. That's what he does. And then, apology. If Trump says, I regret what I said, if it caused anybody personal pain, that's not an apology. Nixon would have called that a non-apology apology. Just because this is simply a throwaway line. It means absolutely nothing. Now, since Western civilization and European roots are so much in demand. I'll tell you something from the history of the medieval Catholic Church, right? You'll find this discussed, for example, in commentaries on Dante, who would not have liked Trump. Dante would not vote for Trump, I can tell you. So in these interesting discussions, the process of being forgiven, if that's what Trump wants, although he's not big enough to say it, right? He's such a little shriveled ego since his father sent him to military school. And his mother, it just seems to be absent from the narrative completely. You got to do three things. Contritio cordis. Feel contrition in your heart. In other words, you have to be really sorry. You have to mean it. Trump doesn't mean it. There's a throwaway line. This was written by the vapid hack Conway, Kellyanne Conway, a creature of the Mercer family. We're going to get to them. So you have to feel contrition. You have to be sorry. Then you have to do confessio oris, confession out of your own mouth. You got to say, I have done these bad things. He doesn't do it. He just says, if anybody felt pain. And then you got to do satisfactio operis, the satisfaction of deeds. In other words, you have to make restitution, right? You can't just say, okay, I'm sorry, and that's the end of it, right? So Trump begs for mercy in this, you know, sense. He doesn't really beg, but that's the idea. He wants you to give it to him. And he doesn't propose to put up anything in order to get it. Right? He's not willing to pay any price. Remember in The Merchant of Venice, Act 4, Scene 1, we have Portia appearing at this trial, essentially in Venice, where Shylock wants a pound of flesh. And she says, the quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. Vice blessed that give him the things. Back in a minute on Vice's video. Radio, don't forget to subscribe to The American System, where Daniela Walls of the Tax Wall Street Party joins me every day for, I think, a very lively, sparkling discussion, but also facing the big issues. So what does Portia say? She reminds us that in the course of justice, none of us should see salvation. And therefore, we do pray for mercy. And that same prayer doth teach us all to render the deeds of mercy. So if you want to be given mercy, and everybody's going to need it, you better give that to other people. And that includes immigrants, the poor, the wretched of the earth, right? The people that Trump delights in destroying. He delights in destroying them. So, he's got this the cruelty thing going on, right? The manic depressive, and every other thing. Narcissism. He's got megalomania. He's got obsessive compulsive disorder. He's got histrionic syndrome, and so forth. So, that's the problem. So, an apology means that. Be sorry. Say in detail what you're sorry for, and then make up for it, right? Some kind of restitution. Even if it's, you know, I'll reform, I'll go straight. And Trump has no idea. He wants to be forgiven, but he forgives nobody, right? Not that old lady that he wanted to expel from her house under eminent domain. None of that. All right. That's the preface, right? Because that's... In order to clear the decks, you can't even talk about these events. If you think that Bannon is a conservative, you're lost. You're drowning. We have to throw you a lifeline because this is just so crazy. Now, the obvious big issue now is with Bannon in particular, as CEO, and the extremism and racism that he represents. Maybe we better establish that before we go on to the question of the October surprise. Bannon is from this Breitbart. Now, I've always, as I've told you, I believe that Andrew Breitbart, the founder of this thing, was someone who was delving into narcotics. In other words, lethal, illegal narcotics. So that's the end of him. And then a group of people who are actually apparently even worse, although maybe that, you know, that could be argued. But the people who come in, like Bannon, come in. And, of course, who is Bannon? Bannon is from Goldman Sachs. Hey, dupes. Hey, gulls. Hey, suckers. The guy is from Goldman Sachs. Do you smell a fault? Is there something wrong in this picture? He's another radical outsider from Goldman Sachs. And, of course, he's not the only one. We've got Mnuchin, the money man of the entire campaign. Mnuchin, right? Mnuchin, any way you want to do it. I think it's from Bohemia. He is the money man is also from Goldman Sachs, as well as Soros. He's a double threat. He's a triple threat. So now we have Bannon. I marvel at the stupidity and the inertia, the mental sloth of people who could look at this guy from Goldman Sachs and say, yes, he's going to bring a new radicalism. Well, radicalism he does bring, but you have to remember, who were Hitler and Mussolini? Right? Who were they? In the basic level, right, Mussolini was an agent of the French embassy, and he was given money to bring Italy into World War I. That was one thing. And then in the case of Hitler, he was an agent of German military intelligence, and that's how come he had Ludendorff, the military dictator of Germany in 1917-1918. That guy, later on in 1923, Ludendorff marched with Hitler in the course of the attempted Munich putsch, the coup that Hitler tried to establish. But then they get paid by bankers. In other words, they start with this, you know, this moral flaw of being an agent, French embassy or German military intelligence. But then they have to get money, and it's up to them to get the money, and they do it by selling themselves to bankers. Yeah. Let's look at Trump. I did a little chart. I hope maybe we put this up somewhere. Trump is now functioning as a joint stock corporation with three principal stockholders, and I'm sure there are more, and I would like people to inform me more. But he's Trump is a joint stock corporation. He's an Aktiengesellschaft, right? He's a stock company, a corporation, or SPA, right? Società per Azioni, that would have been Mussolini, or SA, Société pour Action. So this is the idea. Now, who are the stockholders? Well, Paul Ryan, and there's a cartel of Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, and the Republican National Committee. They own a piece, right? Because he's got to kowtow to them. Because they're providing his ground game, they're providing his fundraising, they're providing the whole apparatus that he's too lazy, too stupid, and too stingy, and too poor to provide for himself. And you can see that reflected in the changes in his tax approach, which have been, you can see that he's trying to get as close as he can to Ryan. Then we have this Peter Thiel, I would say, who came to the Republican convention and gave that speech. And I interpreted that as Peter Thiel, who had been spending money on Ron Paul, and then I guess Rand Paul, mainly Ron Paul. And he showed up at the Republican convention and talked about how proud he was. The guy's another billionaire. So this, by the way, is the guy who has destroyed Gawker, right? This, when you look at the First Amendment, it's in bad shape. even before Trump gets there. If Trump ever does, the First Amendment is going to be shredded. And then we have the interesting topic for today, the Mercer family. And these are the people who seem to own the contracts of Breitbart, the company, of Bannon, and of Kellyanne Conway. Right? They're all creatures of Mercer. So it looks like a tripartite division, right? Omnia Gallia in tres partes divisa. All Gaul is divided into three parts. All Trump seems to be divided into three parts. The Ryan Priebus part, the Mercer part, and the Teal part. And I'm sure we're going to get more. So please don't send me emails asking who are the other, the fourth and the fifth. You tell me. You do some research and find out. So what do we know about this guy? Here we are. ABC News. ABC News. Liz Stark, a former Breitbart spokesman, slammed Donald Trump's new campaign chief executive, Stephen Bannon, for allegedly using racist rhetoric during editorial meetings at Breitbart, which he said sounded like a white supremacist rally, while a Trump ally calls the new CEO a positive addition to the team. Well, it's positive if you want to get the KKK vote. So here we have now the Grand Kleagle. Kleagle or Grand Dragon Bannon? That seems to be who we got. This was on ABC News Powerhouse Politics. We'll just give you a little bit more of this after the break. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. World Crisis Radio. Remember, The American System, now available every day at about 9 p.m. So go and take a look. We're just finishing up with the ABC take on Bannon. Kurt Bardella, who worked with Bannon at Breitbart News for 2 years, says the former Breitbart News chairman regularly disparaged minorities, women, and immigrants during the daily meeting of the editorial staff over at Breitbart. Women, immigrants, minorities, the editorial calls of the publication. Looks like they had their method was the conference call. So he was spewing his racist and reactionary rhetoric. Now, I think the two interesting things, well, we can start with about Bannon also, is the mental world of not only of Andrew Breitbart, but also of Stephen Bannon and of Trump now, it's the world of the 1930s, the world of Hitlerism, the world of National Socialism, the world of Wagnerian myth. Remember, you've seen it in the movie where Hitler tells one of his officers, you can't understand Nazism if you don't understand Wagner. And I'm afraid this is accurate. We've heard before, Alfred Rosenberg, top Nazi ideologist, the boss of them, said we have a limited number of precursors. One of them is Wagner and his operas. Then we have Nietzsche as a philosopher. We have an anti-Semite by the name of Lagarde. And we have Houston Stuart Chamberlain, a British racist who I suppose was sent in to try to build up more racism in Hitler because that's how he destroyed himself. Well, you can make a very good case, and there's a not bad lecture on the internet, how most of Hitler's defeats were directly due to his own ideology. Maybe we'll run through that next week. But the same thing goes for Robert E. Lee. Same thing goes for Hitler. They destroy themselves because they actually believe their own crackpot ideology. So in the case of Bannon, we have a quote from Beyond the Grave from Andrew Breitbart, where he says that Bannon is the Leni Riefenstahl of the Tea Party. He made a documentary about the Tea Party, right? And the Trump phenomenon has a lot of roots in this Tea Party lunacy of 2010, 2011. So what he's saying is Leni Riefenstahl, the German filmmaker, pro-Nazi, she was sort of Hitler's videographer, she made this movie, The Triumph of the Will. Hey, Triumph of the Will is the heart of the Trump method, because he says, whatever the problem is, I don't need a program. All I need is the force of will and the magnetism of my personality. So that's Leni Riefenstahl, and she makes the movie about the 1936 Olympics featuring Hitler as the star of the show. So you see, the idea that you'd make this connection for somebody in your personal surroundings, in your entourage, Bannon is the Leni Riefenstahl of the Tea Party. In other words, he's doing for the Tea Party what Leni Riefenstahl did for Hitler, National Socialism, the race theory, 1936 Olympics. Right? That ought to be pretty scary. Then the fact that, Bannon has an entourage of young women who follow him. He uses them for editorial tasks, for organizational tasks, and other things, and they are called the Valkyries. The Valkyries. Now, this is one of the Wagnerian ring cycle. Let's see if we can tick them off. Das Rheingold, right? The gold of the Rhine. You've got Siegfried. You've got the Twilight of the Gods. And whatever, I guess I'm missing one. I guess I'm not a good Wagnerian. Good. I escaped. I prefer Verdi. Verdi is a million times better than Wagner. Every Verdi opera has a positive anti-oligarchical message. In the case of Wagner, it's just obscurantism, right? It's this world of these crazy myths, and you can't build a civilization based on myths. So people who have tried to do that have failed very poorly. Of course, one was Valkyrie, right? So that was it, right? That was the one I had already mentioned. So Siegfried, the Rheingold, Valkyrie, and Twilight of the Gods, Die Götter Dämmerung, Siegfried's Tod. So this is the world of these people, right? And I know of it, but I'm certainly not endorsing it. As a matter of fact, I'm telling you to watch out. So, what else do we have? He's a yes man. Very interesting here in the Washington Post. Some of this I did in the other program, but the people who get only this one, you better know this. A guy called Shapiro, who was part of Breitbart when Bannon was there, predicts that Bannon will tell Trump he's doing a fantastic job, even if he isn't. That is how Bannon hypnotizes. He doesn't say hypnotizes. He says Svengali's, right, to do what Svengali does, which is to hypnotize the little dancer Trilby and make her do what you want. That's how Bannon's Svengali's political figures and investors, by investing them in his personal genius, then hollowing them out from the inside. Very, very perceptive, I think, by Shapiro. And this is Bannon, is one of the people who shaped the public persona of Sarah Palin, right? Making her go, well, from whatever she was to the point of being a bad joke, right? A punchline figure. The other thing about Bannon, not a conservative, and here's why. He doesn't believe in personal liberty. He doesn't believe in due process. We have a guy here called Ben Howe from, again, the reactionary blog. Washington Post writes conservative blog. It's not conservative. It's reactionary, but at least it's anti-Trump. So the guy Howe from Red State says, you have no idea how dangerous this man is. It is going to be the time to settle scores for quite a while if Trump wins. He goes on. Oh, no, sorry. This is Shapiro again. If Donald Trump wins the election and Steve Bannon becomes his chief of staff, I would have legitimate fears about the use of government power to come after, to attack political enemies. Okay? That's bad. Now, we've also got the backers, right? How did this happen? There's also a Washington Post story from from Thursday, yesterday. Well, last weekend, Trump journeyed to the Hamptons for a fundraiser on Saturday night at the home of Woody Johnson, wealthy Republican plutocrat, owns the New York Jets of the National Football League. And according to people who were there, at this event, Trump was confronted by several supporters, including mega donor Rebecca Mercer. I think this is the daughter of the hedge fund hyena Mercer, right? Robert Mercer, who is the patriarch of the Klan. So Rebecca Mercer talks about, she's heard news reports that various advisors, don't want Trump to be Trump. I guess this would be Manafort. And they're trying to tame his personality. So, three Republicans, talk about this. Trump was infuriated at news stories that anybody would try to change his personality, because of course this is the most perfect personality that could be devised by man or God, Trump thinks about himself. So, we're now at the point where the triumph of Bannon and Conway is imminent. So come back after the break and we'll give it to you here on World Crisis Radio. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley broadcasting to you from Washington, D.C. And it's the afternoon, once again, of the 19th of August. This is pretty much midsummer. Congress is out. Obama's not here. You can actually get a parking space downtown sometime. So here we are. Do take a look at my appearance on the Press TV of Iran, talking about the THAAD question in the Far East. Is it legit for South Korea to get some missile defense, purely defensive weapons? Is that somehow something that's going to increase tensions in the region? And my answer to that is no, it's not. So, therefore, South Korea has the inherent right under the UN Charter to defend themselves, right? Defend themselves. So perfectly legit. But let's get back to this gripping story of intrigue, plutocrats, desperate demagogues, not just Trump, but also Giuliani, in the Hamptons. And mega donor Rebecca Mercer says, what is this that this Manafort wants to bridle or somehow eclipse your magnetic personality, interfere with your triumph of the will? This is the idea. So, at this point, Trump confers with Mercer, all Washington Post here, about potential steps he might take to remake his campaign and populate his inner circle with voices more like his own. Watch out, that way lies danger. So, Bannon and Conway are soon mentioned. Mercer, the daughter of hedge fund titan Robert Mercer, spoke highly of both. He's a moral pygmy, of course, but a hedge fund titan. The Mercer family is prominent as an investor in Breitbart News and also a super PAC that opposes Clinton. And Conway has actually worked for them, right? The charming Kellyanne Conway has also worked for them. So, Manafort, as of today, Manafort is out. So, continuing chaos, right? The great organizer of victory, Trump, right? That flawless executive, right, who knows how to size people up and put the right people in the right places using business. This is another one. If you are so stupid as to think that running the U.S. government as a business is even an option, it's not, right? It's not. you need government skills, right? Government is not the same as business, and it's totalitarian to try to put them together, right? That's a path to the fascist corporate state in some ways, and seems to be what old Don has in mind. So that's where we get it. It's the Mercer family, and that's why I say that if you consider Trump as a joint stock company, the Priebus Ryan people own a piece of him. I'm sure Thiel or Thiel owns a piece of him, but then the Mercers own a piece of him, and this is no good. Now, various sort of obscure publications tell us of the joy in the white nationalist community. White nationalist. Now, this is, of course, something in the United States. You cannot be this because it is a direct negation of the entire national tradition. You can't do it. There is no ethnic nationality. Yeah, sure, there are some, you know, some kinds of local cuisine and stuff like this. But on the big stuff, it's the ideas in the founding documents, and these are accessible to anyone who wants to support them. And if you want to buy in to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, you are free. You're encouraged to do it. So, who is happy? Well, there's a white supremacist by the name of Brimelow, and he has a group called V-Dare. Unbelievable stuff. You wouldn't believe it exists in the 21st century. Now, this is, of course, Virginia Dare. And Virginia Dare was the first child, at least reputedly, Virginia Dare, the first child born to the English colony, I believe, in Jamestown, Virginia. So at that place, we have this Brimelow saying what a great thing it is that Bannon has now been brought in. And then we have something else called the National Policy Institute, another scurrilous organization. And here we have somebody called Richard Spencer, and he loves Bannon, obviously, and he says he has an elective affinity, that Bannon has an elective affinity with the alternate right. Now, obviously what we're dealing with here is an attempted literary allusion to the so-called elective affinities of Goethe, die Wahlverwandtschaften. But this is the prostitution of Goethe. Goethe does not deserve this. Goethe is better than this. He shouldn't be made into a coded language for various kinds of races. So you get the idea, right? And I'm sure there's going to be more and more of this stuff because some of it seems to have been sanitized in the past couple of days since Bannon made it to the big time. This will not end well, not for him and not for Trump. And by the way, you want to see Trump as a racist, Donald Trump? Well, one is that in the early 70s, he and his father, Fred, were attacked by the Housing and Urban Development, right, by the federal housing agencies, because they were practicing racial segregation in their housing developments. The other one is this thing about the Central Park jogger. This is 1989, and it is a group of, I guess, five black kids who were accused of raping a woman, an investment banker, of course, who was jogging in Central Park. And when this didn't go according to Trump's wishes, he bought a full-page newspaper ad saying, bring back the death penalty, support the police, and execute the five kids. So from one point of view, it's called the Central Park jogger, from the point of view of the victim. And then from the other victims, the Central Park five, who were in danger, if Trump had his way, of being executed. And Trump kept going with that. He doesn't care about reality. There was DNA evidence that they didn't do it. And then there was even another person who confessed doing it. Still not enough for Trump. Fry them, kill them. So he gives no mercy, and he will receive none. So here's another thing now. Kellyanne Conway. Let's see if we can go through this in some detail. Kellyanne Conway is supposed to tell Trump now, what do you have to do and say? What are the lines and the rhymes that you have to recite in order to captivate those Republican housewives or Republican married women in the Philadelphia suburbs who are socially liberal? They tend to be sort of light, mild reactionaries on most things, fiscal policy, all that stuff. But they don't want you meddling. They don't want Ted Cruz telling them what they can do and not do, right? They don't like anti-abortion. They don't like that. And they don't like racism because it's embarrassing, right? It lowers your social status, right? You can't have some gutter snipe who's full of racism, right? Trump, parvenu, right? Arrivis. So let's look at Kellyanne Conway's recipe for how to win Bucks County and Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Here in Washington, D.C., 19th of August. So you want to go to AmericanSystem.tv. AmericanSystem.tv. AmericanSystem.tv, if you please. That's where you can subscribe to this daily broadcast, right, as distinct from the current weekly one here. So, Kellyanne Conway, in the fullness of her genius, as a creature of the Mercer family, says that what Trump ought to do is to attack Obamacare. You go to a suburban Philadelphia woman and you say, ma'am, I'm here to destroy Obamacare. I'm going to throw 21 million people off the insurance rolls. They're going to be on their own. They're going to die without care. Their morbidity and mortality goes through the roof. And that's supposed to appeal to women in the, on the whole, relatively, cultured, educated Philadelphia suburbs, right? So this is insanity. But let's just follow this down the road a little bit. Trump was asked last year, I guess already, you say you're going to abolish and replace Obamacare. What are you going to replace it with? The first answer is something terrific. Something terrific. You're going to bet your life on something terrific coming out of the mouth of that con artist, prevaricator, P.T. Barnum, Carnival Barker? Something terrific. Then later he got to the point of saying, I'm going to block grant Medicaid. Duh. Block grant Medicaid. It means that the money for the poorest people who really need this stuff the most are going to go into the hands of a governor like the thug Christie. Christie knows what to do with that money. He'll steal the money and run his state with it. And then he can go to Koch and company and say, look, I didn't raise taxes, because that's what these people care about most. Or Governor Walker, the union-busting, wage-gouging governor of Wisconsin? Or is it going to be Rick Snyder, the heartless monster who said, let them drink the water with the chemicals in it. He doesn't care. So all of that, right? Or is it going to be Kasich? Kasich is one of the cleverest, right? Kasich does the genocide in the back room. He doesn't boast about it. So you get the idea. Block grant Medicaid is a way to destroy Medicaid. And then the obsession of Trump was, you got to let people buy insurance across state lines. Remember, he would say, the lines around the states. We got to get rid of the lines around the states. And then in the next breath, this is actually funny. He said, we've got to empower the states. Well, to empower the states, you would want to keep jurisdiction over insurance in the hands of the states. But with Trump's proposal, the control over the regulation of health insurance automatically goes to the worst state. Will it be Mississippi? Will it be Alabama? Will it be Texas? Who's going to be the most backward, the most business-friendly, the most heartless and, destructive of individual values? And now let me just find this. There is now a document If you go to Trump's website, he wants to tell you that he hates Obamacare. It's really not clear why does he hate Obamacare. It's just that he had to do that because that was the one big issue of the entire Republican Party. So, completely repeal Obamacare. Our elected representatives must eliminate the individual mandate. Nobody should be required to buy insurance unless they want to. Sorry. In the 1790s, I'm sorry, many of the founders, many of the people from the Constitutional Convention voted for those laws that made mandatory health insurance for sailors and other occupations. You have to buy insurance to register a car. I'm sorry. There are occasions, if you want to operate a common carrier, a truck company, a bus line, a railroad line, you need insurance. Modify existing laws that to allow the sale of health insurance across state lines. And that means the race to the bottom. Mississippi, I'm sure, has a good plan already, right? Maybe Beauregard Sessions is going to lead, what is it, Alabama in this race. Allow individuals to deduct health insurance premium payments from their tax returns. When will he understand that most people can't use a deduction? They need a refundable tax credit. These rich guys don't get it. He's out of touch. He's out of touch there on Fifth Avenue. And then we get, of course, point four, health savings accounts. Health savings account is the risk is shifted from a government agency like Medicare or Medicaid. It's shifted to you, sick, little, terrified person. You get the risk. And if you run out of money, it's like a taxi. The taxi stops and you're thrown out. And how you get home is up to you. So it's a taxi. Require price transparency. Yeah, yeah. So you're going to go shop around when you've got cancer and you're going to spend 6 months researching who has the lowest prices. Block grant Medicaid to the states. I've already been through that. That would give wretches like Christie and Walker and Snyder and Kasich, they would get life or death power over you, and they would channel that money into their cronies' pockets. Remove barriers to entry into free markets for drug providers that offer safe, reliable, and cheaper products. Look, Trump, are you going to let Medicare and Medicaid haggle? Because right now they can't. And you're going to let them import? You better come out and say that. He's got a lot of rather twisted verbiage here. And the only reason we can't haggle is because of the party you have chosen to join. So, and of course, let's strip illegal immigrants of their health care if they have any. That would save $11 billion. Yeah, great. Once you have people here in the United States, you want them to become vectors. You want them to become the means by which diseases, right? Maybe it's yellow fever. Maybe it's tuberculosis. Maybe it's Zika. And I want to renew my demand to bring back the Congress. In other words, Obama, I think, is making a political mistake, ostentatiously golfing on the vineyard or wherever he is. Don't do that. Force the Republican Congress back and confront them. Ladies and gentlemen, you of the House and the Senate, you Republicans, you're causing needless death here in the United States. You're causing people to die. You're killing Americans. Vote the money or be damned. And make Trump take a position. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And again, you need to go to AmericanSystem.tv, AmericanSystem.tv, and make sure that you get the lowdown and the update every weekday. Because that's where we're heading right now, 4 days a week, and I think after Labor Day, 5 days a week. So we need to talk about the October surprise, right? This is something that stands in the middle of everything. I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh program a couple of days ago, earlier this week, and I had a interesting insight from a guy called Buck Sexton. And Buck Sexton is a reactionary radio commentator. Again, right-wing radical, not a conservative in any way. And he was on there with a friend of his, John Schindler. John Schindler being a counterintelligence officer from the National Security Agency. So we had the authoritative combination of CIA analyst and NSA counterintelligence man, right? He's doing counter-espionage, counterintelligence. So what did they talk about? They talked about the imminent October surprise. It's going to be the October surprise in favor of Trump, of course, because who else would it favor? Whoever's doing this is looking at this from the point of view of helping Trump. So the things that they were talking about, they volunteered the idea that there will be a data dump on the eve of the November election, and that this will shake all the institutions, right? All the trees in the forest will fall, say Sexton and this guy Schindler. It's going to be a cyber surprise. It's going to be an October surprise. A cyber attack is coming in October. Not only a cyber attack, says Schindler, but a massive cyber attack is coming in October. Now, you have to think about this. What does it mean? It's a cyber surprise, an October cyber surprise. This is what we've been talking about here for almost 6 months now, I would say, since, March, April? As soon as it became obvious that Trump could only win, or most likely win, with an October surprise based on a strategy of tension. And the strategy of tension rolls on, and sometimes it's carefully disguised, other times it's blatant. Looks like the Olympics are almost over. 2 or 3 days more on the Olympics. I think the ending is in the night here between Sunday and Monday. But that could still turn into terrorism. And then other possibilities open up. So what these two guys, Buck Sexton and Schindler, went through is that outside powers, now the general idea is to accuse Russia. I would not do that automatically, although I think the Russian news media have put the Russian government into a terrible situation. I think RT has done a terrible job. I think this Sputnik publication is also doing a terrible job. They are interfering in a very crass and obvious way, and it's full of ill will. Right? In other words, it's the desire to inflict a pestilence like Trump, a loathsome creature like Trump. They somehow feel that that's going to help them. It will not help them. It will cause all kinds of problems. And again, if you don't believe me, go back to the Communist International telling people in Germany that the Social Democrats were the main danger. The Social Democrats and the unions were the bad guys, the social fascists. And guess what came out of that? Hitler seized power. And that was also bad for the Soviet Union, right? In many ways. So, speaking as a friend of Russia, of course, I would say don't do this. Now, what these two guys, Sexton and Schindler, went through, the hackers could hack the Clinton Foundation itself. Right? And they probably have servers. So go in there and try to dig up something compromising. Try to get emails off Mrs. Clinton's private server. I don't know whether they mean the one she has now or the one she had in the past. Try to get the State Department work-related emails involving Mrs. Clinton and get into the Democratic National Committee and find more of that stuff, right? Stuff, you know, anti-Bernie, things like this. Now, you want to notice that Guccifer, if that's really who it is, Guccifer 2 says that he has now hacked the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He said that was very easy to get into. Look, there are different layers. You can hack a dam. You can hack a railroad. You can hack an airliner. You can hack all kinds of guidance systems on transportation, energy, and so forth. And you can cause catastrophes. You can kill people. This would be an act of war. Don't go there. No acts of war. No force and no threat of force, not in the cyber realm or any other realm. Because otherwise, you're playing with fire. You're going to burn your fingers playing with fire. So don't do that. Now, the other one is the hacking, the faking of the entire election. Because if you can hack into a cache server that's got thousands of emails on it, hey, you can then imagine how this could be done vis-a-vis the computer systems that are used to put the votes together, right? To calculate, to tabulate the vote totals. Now, I want to remind you of what happened last time. And it was Karl Rove in 2012. You'll remember, a lot of people do. He had a freak out, a meltdown on Fox News at the point where Fox News Decision Desk was preparing to declare Obama the winner for his second term and Romney defeated in Ohio, which then was the decisive moment of this evening. Karl Rove had prepared a computer system which was called ORCA, O-R-C-A. Go back and look into this, right? Make yourself familiar with this so you get the idea of what's likely to happen. Karl Rove's ORCA was supposedly a get-out-the-vote system. It was supposedly digital, right? What they call today digital, what Cambridge Analytica or Strategic Communications Laboratories will allow you to do. It helps you to identify your voters and get them out, right? And if they haven't voted in the course of a day, you want to be able to call them and send a car there and so forth. So the idea, though, was that ORCA, as it was called, was the public face of a vote fraud machine. Notice I say vote fraud. This is another thing, you know. It's not voter fraud. It's vote fraud. I'll tell you the difference. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley from Washington, D.C., inviting you to remember to follow me every day by day, AmericanSystem.tv. AmericanSystem.tv. It's radio, but TV is a great URL, wouldn't you say? And we hope it will become TV before too long, but right now it's hard-hitting internet radio. So, Karl Rove announced in the campaign of 2012 that the Republicans had this system called ORCA. Sounds like a killer whale, isn't that it? And there he was. The accusation then came that this was a vote fraud machine, that it was going to try to interfere with the collecting and tabulating of actual vote data. So it was vote fraud. Voter fraud is almost non-existent. Things like this done by little people, it's inconsequential. It doesn't add up to anything. You can't do it. What we're talking about is vote fraud done top down with computers by people like Rove or people, I was going to say Manafort, but he's gone, right? Bannon, does Bannon know how to do it? So, the announcement then came after the election, right? Why did Karl Rove have to go into that freakout? Well, the hacktivist group, Anonymous, came forward and claimed credit for defeating Romney. How did they do it? They shut down ORCA Karl Rove's GOTV supercomputer that this was actually a vote tabulation manipulation software. Okay? So they say, we began following the digital traffic of one Karl Rove, a disrespecter of the rule of law, knowing that he claimed to be kingmaker while grifting vast wealth from barons who gladly handed him gold to anoint another king while looking the other way. After a short time, we identified the digital structure of Karl's operation and even that of his orca. This was an easy task because they left all the doors open. So I'm reading to you from some of the better articles which were done in the Daily Kos, K-O-S, back at the time, right, in middle November of 2012. There was also a write-up of this in Wonket, and I think Op-Ed News got it too. But beyond that, there's almost nothing. So you got to start thinking, what if somebody, a government, hackers, combination of the above, if they try to pervert the outcome of this election, and they'll be doing it for Trump. And I'm amazed to see Pat Buchanan, right, the great race theorist and reactionary. Pat Buchanan writes about a possible October surprise in this sense. And, of course, it doesn't have to be cyber. It can be a financial crash. There's a guy on here. Let's see if we can find him. There's a character on the Internet who is telling you now that the end of the world is coming. This always gets attention, needless to say. And the end of the world is going to be coming in September, towards the end of the month. Let me find this so you can mark your calendar. I think it's the 26th of September that he's talking about. I'm sorry, September 30th. Well, September 30th. Look, the end of every quarter is a payments deadline. This has been so since time immemorial. Every quarter is one, but the most important one politically and financially is the third quarter to fourth quarter. In other words, September 30th to October 1st. So undoubtedly, there will be increased interest, right? There may also be, you know, triple witching hour, things like this, right? We'll look into it. But this guy's telling you, time to buy gold because of this event. James Rickards says all this stuff. The new case for gold, the big drop, and other things. So this could all be part of this kind of a destabilization scenario, okay? But think of Orca. That would be an important one. Now, a poll. We've got the Washington Post poll of Virginia, okay? And let's just spend the remaining time on this. Right? Virginia. Let's start with Virginia. It's a swing state. It's a purple state, or at least it was, until Trump came on the scene. And it's one of that group of states you've heard about, right, that Trump and the new gang are supposedly targeting. Let's see if we can remember those. Ohio, Florida, Nevada, Iowa, North Carolina. Now, Larry Sabato says Virginia is already gone for Trump. Trump always says, I get big rallies. Romney called that intensity. Remember? There's so much intensity. Yeah, that's not enough. The electorate is much bigger than your little rally. So here's what goes on. When you look at a poll, you got to figure that the Trump people are going to try to do black operations. They're going to try to do disinformation ops with their polls. So here's a Washington Post poll. It was done from August 11th to the 14th. You want to know when it was. Random sample, 1,002 Virginia adults on landline phones and cellular phones. You got to factor in all this stuff. The margin of sampling error is plus or minus 4 percentage points because you don't want to do adults. You have to get an adult, but you want to have a registered voter. So here's 888 registered voters. And when you refine that down, They find among those 707 are likely voters. You want the likely voters, people who have voted last time, who are going to vote this time, say so. You can also test that in various ways. So those are the things you want to know. So what do we find? That the main factor in operation is a rejection of Trump, a dislike of Trump. So right now, Clinton leads Trump by 52% to 38% in Virginia. Used to be a southern state. Right? It looks like the Confederacy is finally breaking up. So a 14-point lead for Clinton. Obama carried Virginia in 2008 and 2012. And the big issue here is the Washington suburbs, especially places in Arlington, in Fairfax, in Loudoun, and places like this. Because these are now, a lot of them are millennials, and they don't like the strident, racist, divisive, narcissistic tone. So Trump, he really would need Virginia, and he's not going to get it. Now, here's a great guy. Walt Purnell, P-U-R-N-E-L-L, 71 years old, a retired businessman from Ashburn. That would be pretty much between Fairfax and Loudoun, more or less. He wanted to vote for Jeb. He wanted to vote for Kasich. He wanted to vote for Rubio. He wanted to vote for Christie. Trump, no way. Quote, I think he's a failure. I think he's a fraud. I think he's a con artist. I think he's insane, said Purnell. Not a bad summary. Now, Trump's negatives. Hillary has problems. 54% don't like Hillary. 44% view her favorably. But Trump is worse off. He has 65% negative. So he's underwater, right? Twice as many people don't like him as do like him. 56% view Trump in a strongly unfavorable light, 13 points worse than Clinton. And with Kane, it basically wraps it up. So we'll see this again next week. But long and the short of it is, Trump has lost Virginia, unless an October surprise of terrorism and chaos can bail him out. So we'll see you next week on World Crisis Radio. And remember, AmericanSystem.tv in the meantime.